Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Radio Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM, Descanso. Today, we open our show with some national stories from Public News Service, including news that former President Donald Trump will be indicted Tuesday on federal charges in Florida, as well as a Supreme Court ruling on redistricting and the impact of Canadian wildfires on air quality in the U.S. Then, in local news, we'll have a rundown on the four candidates who have qualified for the ballot in the 4th Supervisorial District to replace Nathan Fletcher. And we'll have an update on a livestock disease that now has 44 properties quarantined, including 28 right here in San Diego County. On our Capitol Report, hear about a bipartisan immigration reform bill just introduced in Congress. Plus, we'll have news about a bill in Sacramento to enhance workers' comp benefits for firefighters and other first responders who increasingly suffer PTSD as they battle longer and more severe wildfires. Then, hear about a group of homeowners in Winola helping neighbors in their community create defensible space to protect against wildfires. On Destination East County, we have some amazing events coming up in June and July, including a Renaissance Fair, 4th of July festivities, and more. On People Power, hear about rescued bear cubs rehabilitated in Ramona that have just been released into the wild. June is Adopt a Shelter Cat Month, and the Humane Society is over capacity with cats, including dozens recently rescued from inhumane conditions. Florida Governor Ron DeSantis, who just declared his candidacy for president, is under investigation in two states, including California, for flying immigrants out of Florida under false pretenses, circumstances that California's governor and attorney general suggest could result in kidnapping charges. San Diego County supervisors have taken action to protect victims of wage theft and will have details. Wildfires in California are making it harder to get insurance and lowering property values in some areas. We'll have a report today from California News Service. Then we'll take you on the road to the Desert View Tower in Jacumba, one of our region's most unique roadside attractions. A BMX champion has died of injuries sustained at a Ramona X Games track. We'll have details on our show today. California teachers are calling for an investigation into the impacts of social media on children's mental health, California News Service reports. And finally, from Master Gardener Connie Beck, hear about some of her favorite plants to add to your garden. So stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters.
The Public News Service Daily Newscast for June the 9th, 2023. I'm Mike Clifford. A 7-count federal indictment against former President Donald J. Trump. The New York Times reports the Justice Department took the legally and politically momentous step of lodging those charges against a former president. That's according to multiple people familiar with the matter on Thursday evening. The Times reports the indictment filed in federal district court in Miami is the first time in American history a former president has faced federal charges. The Times notes the charges put the nation in an extraordinary position given Trump's status as the one-time chief exec, but also as a frontrunner for the 2024 GOP nomination to be president to face Biden, whose administration will now be seeking to convict his potential rival. On Thursday, the U.S. Supreme Court upheld a lower court ruling in a 5-4 vote that Alabama's 2022 congressional maps violated the Voting Rights Act.
The decision safeguards Section 2 of the 1965 Voting Rights Act, which bans voting practices that discriminate based on race, color, or membership in specific language groups. As a result, Alabama may see new congressional maps soon. League of Women Voters Alabama President Kathy Jones praised the ruling as a momentous day for voters and voting rights advocates by guaranteeing that Black voters in Alabama can fairly select their preferred candidate, knowing their votes matter.
It is a powerful declaration that black voices in Alabama will no longer be ignored. We are pleased that we are one step closer to finally achieving equal representation in our state.
In January, it was determined that Alabama's voting map likely infringed on the Voting Rights Act. Mapmakers distributed residents into districts in such a way that only allowed black voters to elect candidates in one district, despite comprising about 27% of the voting age population. Shantia Hudson reporting.
We get more now on voting rights from our Danielle Smith.
The new Pennsylvania redistricting table is a partnership of organizations concerned about redistricting, saying they want the process to focus on voters instead of legislators and political parties. Carol Cunningham, chair of the group Fair District PA, says more than 200 people attended a virtual forum showing there is considerable interest in redistricting reform.
The panelists, they discussed what we've learned about redistricting reform, what we've learned about how to make sure voters' votes are not diluted in the redistricting process.
She says her organization has been trying to get reform legislation passed since 2016.
This is Public News Service. As smoke from the Canadian wildfires blankets New York and much of the East Coast, it is causing a wide range of health effects, and not just for people.
According to the Environmental Protection Agency, they can be as minor as eye and respiratory tract irritation to worsening asthma and even causing heart failure. And humans aren't the only ones feeling the effects of smoky skies. Wildlife is compromised through loss of habitat, food, and water sources. Karina Newsom with the National Wildlife Federation notes climate change could make this a regular occurrence.
With there being more frequent, more intense, longer burning wildfires, and of course, natural movement of air, we can absolutely expect to see wildfire smoke occurring in places where maybe wildfires are not actually burning, like we're seeing right now, being a more frequent experience.
New York Governor Kathy Hochul has ordered New York firefighters to help combat the Canadian blazes. As for the Belmont Stakes this weekend, Hochul says she's taking additional measures to protect racehorses and spectators, adding if the air quality hits 200, the race will be canceled. I'm Edwin J. Vieira.
Most residents in Illinois will soon be paying the 1% state sales tax on their groceries again. The governor there, J.B. Pritzker's temporary tax relief, set to expire July the 1st, following a one-year suspension.
It covered what the state refers to as low-rate grocery items, not the high-rate foods and beverages that are taxed at a full 6.25%. Restaurant Opportunity Center, or ROC United, is a nonprofit that advocates for restaurant industry workers. Manuel Villanueva with the group says the return of the 1% tax can be tough for this low-wage workforce, as pay is still relatively low since the pandemic, even as Illinois rents continue to climb. He says inflation isn't making things any easier.
Those little pennies on the dollar, once you go to the grocery store or a family of four, that is an average of $500 every 2 weeks. That can be really detrimental for their expenses.
Although many believe exempting groceries from state sales tax bases has a progressive effect, research from the Tax Foundation finds that it isn't the case. It says grocery exemptions are a middle income, not a low income benefit, and middle earners can more efficiently recoup the expenses through grocery tax credits. Farah Siddiqui reporting.
Finally, the Bureau of Land Management has announced a $161 million investment in habitat and wildlife restoration in 11 western states. Alaska is scheduled to receive $5 million. Joel Webster is with the Theodore Roosevelt Conservation Partnership.
It's really about restoring impact from mining activities. There's important salmon habitat in that landscape. Landscape level restoration focused on cleaning up historic mining damage.
This is Mike Clifford. Thank you for wrapping up your week with Public News Service, member and listener supported. Hear us on interesting radio stations, your favorite podcast platform. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
Four candidates have qualified for the ballot in the special election for the District 4 supervisor seat, which has been left vacant by the resignation of Nathan Fletcher. If no candidate wins a majority in the August 15th primary, a runoff between the top two vote-getters will be held November 7th. The qualifying candidates are Janessa Goldbeck, a Marine veteran and CEO of Vet Voice Foundation, Paul McQuigg, a military veteran and speaker for disabled vets, Amy Reichart, a small business owner and founder of Reopen San Diego, and Monica Montgomery Steps, the president pro tem of the San Diego City Council. A fifth candidate who pulled nomination papers, Lemon Grove Mayor Raquel Vasquez, has announced that she decided not to run. Janessa Goldbeck is a Marine Corps veteran who stood up for victims of sexual assault as a victim's advocate in the military. She previously worked as a human rights advocate to protect civilians in conflict zones. Currently, she serves as CEO of Vet Voice Foundation, a national nonprofit. Locally, she's fought for affordable and middle-income housing, union jobs, equal pay for women, resources to prevent veteran suicides, LGBTQ services, what she calls common sense gun safety measures, and services for homeless youths. She serves on the boards of the UCSD Chancellor's Community Advisory Group, MANA de San Diego, and the San Diego LGBT Community Center, as well as the San Diego Mayor's LGBT Task Force and the County's Behavioral Health Advisory Board. She calls herself an avid explorer and advocate for the outdoors, as well as an experienced policy advocate. Goldbeck's endorsements include Democratic Congressman Mike Levine, Juan Vargas and Scott Peters, former Congresswoman Susan Davis, and California Senate President Pro Tem Tony Atkins. Paul McQuigg was a gunnery sergeant in the U.S. Marine Corps before a roadside bomb in Iraq left him with severe injuries. He's now a speaker and advocate for disabled veterans, adaptive sports, and conquering challenges. His military experience included leading Marines in combat duty as well as serving as a liaison between military and community leaders, planning over 100 community events, according to his LinkedIn profile. As a civilian, he's worked as an emergency first responder instructor, police and fire commissioner for the city of Oceanside, firearms instructor, and scuba instructor. Amy Reichardt is a licensed private investigator and a conservative activist. She became involved in politics during the pandemic, fighting to reopen businesses and schools. She founded the nonprofit Reopen San Diego. She holds a master's degree in divinity and has served as a minister at Eastlake Church. She says her priorities are lowering the cost of living, solving the homeless epidemic, and increasing public safety in communities. Her endorsements include prominent Republicans such as Congressman Daryl Issa, El Cajon Mayor Bill Wells, and State Senator Brian Jones, as well as the San Diego County Republican and Libertarian parties and California Parents United. Monica Montgomery Stepps is the president of the San Diego City Council and chairs the city's Budget and Government Efficiency Committee. She also serves on the Committees for Public Safety, Economic Development and Intergovernmental Relations, Active Transportation and Infrastructure, and the Rules Committee. She serves on the MTS Board of Directors, the San Diego Workforce Partnership, and other agencies. Stepps holds a law degree from Cal Western and worked as a criminal justice advocate for the ACLU, as well as senior policy advisor for the City of San Diego before her election to the City Council. On the Council, she led efforts for police reforms and creating the Office of Race and Equity. She supported increased support for small businesses and job training, investing in marginalized communities, building affordable homes for seniors and veterans, and increasing services for homeless people and those battling addictions. If elected supervisor, she wants to create jobs and opportunities for working families, invest in small businesses, raise the county's minimum wage, invest in homeless shelters and services, support affordable housing, mental health services, parks, oversight of law enforcement, and programs to improve public safety. She is endorsed by prominent Democrats, including Assemblymember Dr. Akilah Weber, La Mesa City Councilmember Patricia Dillard, San Diego City Council President Sean Elo Rivera, and Service Employees International Union, Local 221. District 4 includes many San Diego neighborhoods, as well as the cities of La Mesa and Lemon Grove, and unincorporated communities from Spring Valley to Crest. The District 4 seat became vacant May 15th, when the resignation of Nathan Fletcher took effect after allegations of sexual misconduct and a lawsuit filed by an MTS employee. Fletcher has denied the allegations, but resigned his leadership position at MTS, as well as his supervisorial seat. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
How you gonna keep 'em down on the farm after they seen Harry?
This is Derek Wilton with East County Magazine's Agricultural Report. 44 properties in Southern California are now under quarantine due to an outbreak of vesicular stomatitis virus, or VSV. A livestock disease that started in mid-May in San Diego County. Now this disease has spread into three counties. The quarantine includes 28 properties in San Diego County, as well as sites in Riverside and San Bernardino counties. That's according to the latest update posted by the U.S. Department of Agriculture on June 2nd. Since the last report, 1 week earlier, 18 new properties have been quarantined, including 3 new confirmed positive cases and 8 suspected cases here in San Diego County. While the USDA has not disclosed precisely where the most recent cases have occurred, local veterinarians have confirmed to media outlets that Ramona, Lakeside, Campo, Jamul, Del Sur, and Descanso have all had VSV cases. To date, all the quarantine sites have cases in horses or other equine species, except one property with VSV in cattle. The disease can occur in other animals, however, such as llamas, alpacas, pigs, sheep, goats, and deer. It can also spread to humans, though in people it normally produces severe flu-like symptoms instead of the blister-like lesions characteristically found on the mouths, noses, hooves, and other areas in afflicted livestock. While the disease is rarely fatal, it can be debilitating for animals and may disrupt events such as horse shows or livestock auctions. The disease is spread through bites by insects such as black flies, sand flies, or midges, but can also be transmitted through shared food or water or on commonly touched surfaces. In a webinar on May 31st, Dr. Angela Pelzel-McCluskey, equine epidemiologist with the USDA, said the disease is believed to have spread north from Mexico into areas of California doused by the heaviest rainfall in decades. More water means more breeding grounds for insects that spread VSV. When VSV is confirmed or suspected at a site, the USDA mandates quarantine for at least 14 days of all susceptible species. Animals with lesions must be isolated. Quarantine sites are also required to implement enhanced biosecurity and steps to control flies and other insects to stop the spread of VSV. The U.S. Equestrian Foundation has implemented new biosecurity requirements for equine competitions. A veterinarian must examine all horses from outbreak-affected states on arrival, bar any entry to horses with symptoms, and monitor horses twice daily on site. Some states or venues may impose stricter requirements, such as banning entry of all animals from areas with VSV quarantines. So be sure to check with each destination before traveling with your horses or other livestock while the VSV outbreak continues.
Florida Governor Ron DeSantis launched his campaign for president last month. Now his role in shipping immigrants to other states has sparked criminal investigations in 2 states. A year ago, DeSantis signed a budget that allocated $12 million to transport undocumented immigrants out of Florida. Last September, he claimed credit for flying 49 asylum seekers from Texas to Martha's Vineyard in Massachusetts, the New York Times reported. And this past week, over a dozen migrants were flown to Sacramento, California, by private plane. Now, in both instances, no care at all had been arranged before the migrants were dumped off, and some migrants told authorities that they had been lured onto those flights with false promises of jobs and opportunities. On June 2nd, Sheriff Javier Salazar in Bexar County, Texas, announced that his office has officially filed felony and misdemeanor charges of unlawful restraints with the district attorney's office regarding those 49 migrants flown to Martha's Vineyard, Texas Public Radio reports. Now the DA is determining whether to prosecute the defendants, who haven't been named, but could include members of the DeSantis administration, the Miami Herald reports. On June 3rd, California Attorney General Rob Bonta announced that he's met with the migrants sent to California. Bonta issued a press release saying, "We are investigating the circumstances by which these individuals were brought to California. We are also evaluating potential criminal or civil action against those who transported or arranged for the transport of these vulnerable immigrants." DeSantis defended shipping immigrants to Martha's Vineyard in a press release last year. He blamed the Biden administration for not doing enough to slow immigration, stating, "States like Massachusetts, New York, and California will better facilitate the care of these individuals who they have invited into our country by incentivizing illegal immigration through their designation as sanctuary states." DeSantis added that his message to immigrants is, "We are not a sanctuary state. It's better to be able to go to a sanctuary jurisdiction. We will help facilitate that transport for you so you can go to greener pastures." Now, DeSantis has not admitted to shipping immigrants to California, But Bonta says the immigrants had documents purporting to be from Florida's state government, and their transportation was arranged by the same private contractor who shipped immigrants to Massachusetts. California's attorney general says his office is gathering evidence, and he adds, "I want to say this very clearly. State-sanctioned kidnapping is not a public policy choice. It is immoral and disgusting." On June 5th, Bonta posted on Twitter that a second flight of asylum seekers has touched down in Sacramento, and his office is also investigating how they were brought here. Bonta, who immigrated to California from the Philippines as an infant with his family, concludes, "We are a nation built by immigrants, and we must condemn the cruelty and hateful rhetoric of those, whether they are state leaders or private parties, who refuse to recognize humanity and who turn their backs on extending dignity and care to fellow human beings." Unlike the state of Florida, Bonta says California and the Sacramento community will welcome these individuals with open arms and provide them with the respect, compassion, and care they will need after such a harrowing experience. Now, California Governor Gavin Newsom posted a tweet suggesting the state may prosecute DeSantis for abducting immigrants. He called DeSantis a pathetic man, then warned, "This isn't Martha's Vineyard." Kidnapping charges? Newsom's Twitter post linked to a California Penal Code section which states that anybody who abducts or takes by force or fraud a person found within the state is guilty of kidnapping. Reporting on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Miriam Raftery.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
This is East County Magazine's Capitol Report, bringing you the latest news and newsmakers from our nation's capital. This is Miriam Raftery with a Capitol Report. Representatives Maria Elvira Salazar of Florida and Veronica Escobar of Texas have proposed a bipartisan immigration bill called the Dignity Act of 2023. If enacted, it would provide immigrants with a path to citizenship while also strengthening border security and phasing in E-Verify requirements for employers. Salazar, a Republican, has been working on the bill alongside Escobar, a Democrat, since December before introducing the bill, H.R. 3599, in late May. The bill addresses four core principles: stopping illegal immigration, providing a dignified solution for undocumented immigrants living in America, strengthening the American workforce and economy, and ensuring the U.S. remains prosperous and competitive in the future, according to the authors. The measure would provide $25 billion for border protection. Funding would include boosting Border Patrol personnel, enhancing physical barriers such as walls, and new technology to prevent illegal crossing. In addition, Operation Stone Garden would be funded under the bill, providing funds to states, counties, tribal governments, and other entities near the border to help enhance border security. The border must first be declared as secured, however, before anyone is given an opportunity to gain legal status. Undocumented individuals could be granted legal status under the Dignity Program if they have resided in the U.S. for at least 5 years. They pay a $5,000 fee over the course of 7 years, pass a criminal background test, pay any outstanding taxes, and begin or continue to pay taxes. A streamlined procedure would be available for those granted temporary protection through the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrival, or DACA, program, waiving fees for many DACA recipients as well. The measure would allow previously undocumented workers to work and travel anywhere freely. However, 1.5% would be levied from their income and deposited into the Immigration Infrastructure Fund. U.S. taxpayer funds will not go toward the Dignity Act. The redemption program is a secondary 5-year program following the Dignity Program, which would allow applicants to be potentially eligible for citizenship. Applicants must learn English and U.S. civics, as well as contribute to their community or pay an additional $5,000 in restitution. As for asylum seekers, processing time would be sped up to 60 days, with the initial screening being made within the first 15 days and the second one between days 15 and 60. Currently, some applicants have been waiting for years. The bill would also authorize humanitarian campuses where migrants can meet with legal counsel, be interviewed by officials to discuss their asylum claim, and have their cases decided by asylum officers. Regional processing centers would be established in areas across Latin America as well, where individuals would be pre-screened for asylum eligibility. The bipartisan bill is bound to induce conflicts and opposition from some in both Republican and Democratic parties, but it can be seen as a courageous step forward in introducing a possible solution for the decades-long issue of immigration reform. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, networking for social justice.
A free press is the foundation of our democracy. KNSJ Radio is dedicated to providing nonprofit news in the public interest, not special interests. We rely on your support to continue bringing you important stories from San Diego and East County that you won't hear anywhere else. Please make a generous donation at knsj.org to sustain KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
A state Senate bill that would expand workers' compensation for coverage of California's first responders experiencing post-traumatic stress has passed the state Senate unanimously and now heads to the Assembly, CalMatters reports. It aims to address what Cal Fire officials call a mental health crisis. Authored by Senator John Laird, a Santa Cruz Democrat, the bill is one of several state measures aiming to address the cause of mental health struggles facing first responders and the difficulty they encounter when seeking medical care through state-run insurance. The bill would extend by 7 years a provision in existing state law set to expire in 2025 that makes PTSD qualified as an occupational illness covered by workers' comp for firefighters, police, and other first responders. The bill would also make the categories of dispatchers, peace officers, investigators, and public security officers eligible for claims of psychological injury. Trial by Fire, a series of CalMatters stories published last summer, revealed how overwork and distress from intensifying wildfires have left Cal Fire crews with increasing PTSD, suicidal thoughts, and other mental health problems. Cal Fire Director Joe Tyler told CalMatters that the department faced a mental health crisis and called it his top priority. Cal Fire does not track suicides or PTSD among its ranks, but many firefighters and their supervisors told CalMatters that the problems are rampant and described their trauma in detail. Stress from long hours and dangerous work triggers health problems, excessive drinking, drug use, and marital discord among firefighters, experts say. Senator Laird says the CalMatters series set the context for his bill and other efforts to address the mental health crisis among first responders. The state has already agreed to a union contract that would reduce Cal Fire firefighters' 72-hour work weeks to 66 hours beginning in late 2024. The state firefighters' union has long called for legislators to plug gaps in workers' comp coverage that make it difficult for them to receive robust mental health care coverage. This bill, SB 623, would be a first step towards doing that. But some issues facing first responders are harder to legislate, encouraging them to report their struggles while ensuring that their jobs are not threatened. As well as expanding Cal Fire's accountability and improving its data reporting while maintaining medical privacy. The bill moves things in the right direction, says Tim Edwards, president of Cal Fire Local 2882. We support any bill that would bring awareness and funding to help fight the growing number of calls for help. Laird said state officials are reluctant to write checks to fix a problem they can't quantify, making it critical that first responders share their PTSD experiences with legislators as evidence. Laird said lobbying efforts from the first responders groups were effective because they included personal stories from workers suffering from PTSD and other mental health illnesses. The proposed legislation recognizes the stress experienced by dispatchers and 911 operators who may not witness accidents or fires, but nonetheless experience trauma and may want to seek counseling. Opposition to the bill comes from a coalition of workers' comp organizations and the State Association of Counties. They say psychological problems are difficult to diagnose and their origins tricky to pinpoint, setting a high bar to ascribe trauma and PTSD as a workplace injury. According to an analysis by the Senate Appropriations Committee, extending coverage would likely result in increased workers' compensation costs, but the amount is unknown. California Professional Firefighters, the union which represents state and local fire agencies, told senators that occupational stress among its ranks is well documented and that chronic exposure to traumatic events increases the risk for PTSD and other stress-induced symptoms. These are burning issues in California, where climate change is fueling larger, more frequent, and more destructive wildfires. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Derek Wilton.
CAL FIRE leaders have warned that the heavy rains this past winter have fueled growth of brush across the backcountry, setting the stage for what could be a severe wildfire season. But in Julian, the Winola Estates neighborhood is working together to protect its residents and their homes from wildfires. After requiring homeowners to clear overgrown trees and shrubs from the community's 80 properties, the Winola Estates Fire Safe Council organized a community chipping event. Over 30 residents came together to collect foliage for chipping. The work began with chippers, tractors, trailers, and more for several days earlier this month, with people working up to 8 hours a day to create defensible space. Winola Estates is no stranger to fire danger, since it borders the burn site of the Yanaha Fire of 1956, which claimed the lives of 11 firefighters. In 2003, the community lost 2 homes in the Cedar Fire. Resident and FireSafe Councilmember Sandy McCann says, "To do our part is huge. It's past critical that we do what is needed to keep our homes hardened." As a true community effort, this work is also being done at no cost to residents. Many members of the community are well into their retirement years, and the cost of clearing the large properties can be a burden. So McCann explains this is all done through grants. This isn't out of pocket. A lot of the people in our neighborhood don't have several hundred dollars to clear their property, she adds. The council recommends maintaining a 100-foot safety radius around homes with no combustible materials. Residents had the option to keep their chippings for use as mulch or have them hauled off by the group and delivered to the nearby Julian Farm and Orchard to help with weed control there, in accordance with the farmers' commitment to recycling and sustainability. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
Our East County Magazine radio show needs volunteers, and so does our award-winning news website at eastcountymagazine.org. If you would like to help write scripts, learn reporting skills, research topics for our news team, or have an on-air voice to be the media, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617.
The East County Magazine Show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Now stay tuned for part two of the East County Magazine radio show. Welcome to East County Magazine's Destination East County, bringing you all of the top festivals, events, and attractions across East County each week. A Renaissance event, outdoor concerts, the Mount Helix Food and Wine Festival, a Taste of San Diego East, a Team on a Trek challenge, comedy, the musical Grease on stage, 4th of July celebrations, and fireworks are all coming up in San Diego's East County this summer. Harken back in time to the 16th century to experience the Renaissance on Saturday, June 17th in Santee. Come as you are or dress to experience the life of a noble knight or peasant. You can try your hand at archery, watch fighting tournaments all day long, learn a craft, learn a dance, listen to a bardic recital, or experience a battle of the bards. Enjoy fun for the entire family, and admission is free. The festivities run from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. on Riverwalk Drive in Santee. This is the first of what is expected to become an annual event, sponsored by the Kiwanis Club of Santee as the club celebrates its 50th anniversary.
Santee officials say it's music to their ears, with the start of the city's summer concerts taking stage on June 15th and running through August 17th. The concerts are held at Town Center Community Park East on Thursday nights from 6:30 p.m. to 8 p.m., except for July 6th. For a full list of live bands performing, visit cityofsanteeca.gov.
The California Note Catchers, a women's four-part harmony chorus, will be presenting Sounds of Summer on Saturday, June 17th at 2 p.m. The concert will be held at the La Mesa First United Methodist Church on Palm Avenue in La Mesa. The chorus will be singing classic and traditional songs. Also featured will be community guest ensembles. For more information, visit californianotecatchers.com.
Saps at Sea, the San Diego chapter of the Sons of the Desert, the Laurel and Hardy Appreciation Society, will present their June meeting, Stan and Ollie in Cop Troubles, on June 17th at Trinity Presbyterian Church in Spring Valley. There will also be cartoons and films featuring guest comedians, as well as Laurel and Hardy's first feature, Pardon Us, as well as a short film, The Who's Gal. Doors open at 6:30 p.m., with the show starting at 7. For more information, visit the Saps at Sea Facebook page.
The La Mesa Chamber of Commerce's 14th annual popular foodie event, called Taste of San Diego East, is set for Monday, June 26th at the newly renovated Town & Country Hotel in Mission Valley. The popularity and crowd of this annual event has outgrown the La Mesa Community Center, where it was held for the first 10 years. Guests are invited to taste, savor, mingle at the ballroom, and visit with business owners. There will be food samples, prizes, a silent auction, and raffles. For tickets and reservations, you can visit lamesachamber.net/taste.
The City of Lemon Grove invites you to Concerts in the Park each Thursday evening from 6:30 to 8 p.m. at Berry Street Park. The concerts run from June 29th through August 10th. Bring a blanket or lawn chair along with your own picnic or barbecue.
Visionary Youth Theater presents Grease, School Version, at the Visionary Performance Space in La Mesa on June 30th through July 9th. The hit musical with a hip-shaken rock and roll score celebrates Rydell High's class of 1959 in all their duck-tailed, bobby-socked, gum-snapping glory. The fun-loving spirit and immortal songs make Grease a favorite among rock and roll fans of all ages. For tickets, you can visit visionarydancetheater.org.
You're invited to don your cowboy boots and wrangle up the gang for the Mount Helix Food and Wine Festival on the evening of August 19th. This year's event features a Wild West theme, food and wine tasting from local restaurants and beverage companies, as well as artists, live and silent auctions, live music, sunset views from atop Mount Helix, and dancing under the stars. For tickets, visit mounthelixpark.org.
You're invited to bring friends, form a team with a creative name, and vie for prizes and fun challenges at stations across Grossmont Center in La Mesa on Friday, July 28th from 4 to 7 p.m. It's all part of Team on a Trek, an event to raise funds for the nonprofit San Diego Oasis Learning and Wellness Centers. The fun will also include music, entertainment, and awards. Think of it as an amazing race type of event, but for all ages and levels. Teams are encouraged to show some spirit and get silly, organizers say. There will be awards such as Best Costume, Best Team Name, and Most Spirited. Multi-generational teams are encouraged. There is a fee for teams to enter. You can register for Team on a Trek at the San Diego Oasis website, which is san-diego.oasisnet.org, or just Google San Diego Oasis.
The City of Santee will host its annual Santee Salute celebration on Tuesday, July 4th from 2 p.m. to 10 p.m. at Santee Town Center Community Park East. You're invited to celebrate our nation's 247th birthday with fireworks at 9 p.m. that will also feature a soundtrack playing live on Santee TV. There will also be live bands, patriotic presentations, food trucks, and more. Parking is limited, so carpooling and public transit are encouraged, or you can buy a parking permit at cityofsanteeca.gov.
The City of El Cajon hosts its annual Independence Day celebration with fireworks in Kennedy Park on July 4th. Arrive early and bring a blanket, lawn chairs, and a picnic dinner. The family fun includes train rides from 2 to 7 p.m., arts and crafts plus family games from 3 to 7 p.m., live bands from 3 to 9, and of course, fireworks at 9 p.m. For more information on the El Cajon 4th of July celebration, you can go to elcajon.gov.
An old-fashioned 4th of July celebration will be held at Poway's Midland Park from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. on July 4th. Celebrate our country's independence as it was done a century ago. This event will feature patriotic entertainment, free children's crafts, train displays, and old-fashioned games. Tasty treats and train rides will be available for a nominal fee. Find more information at poway.org/calendar.
That's all for this week. We'll be back next week with more festivals, events, and attractions in San Diego's East County.
See you around East County!
This is East County Magazine's People Power, profiling local people making a positive difference in our community and our world.
The San Diego Humane Society recently posted on Facebook, "We barely can contain our excitement as two bear cubs have an incredible second chance at life in the wild after spending 5 months at our Ramona Wildlife Center for care and rehabilitation. The male and female cubs, each 15 months old, have been released in Central California's Inyo and Tulare counties by the California Department of Fish and Wildlife. Both cubs arrived at the Ramona facility in December. The male cub had been orphaned and was displaying signs of becoming accustomed to human presence, posing risks for both the bear and the public. The female cub was discovered abandoned and malnourished. Wildlife authorities believe she was orphaned due to heavy rainstorms that can flood bear dens. During their stay in Ramona, the cubs were housed in an outdoor enclosure with access to trees and natural surroundings, allowing them to engage in activities like running, climbing, playing, and foraging for food. The Humane Society concludes, "We are immensely grateful to the California Department of Fish and Wildlife and our exceptional Project Wildlife team for providing these bears with the opportunity to lead healthy lives in their natural habitat." Reporting for East County Magazine, this is Derek Wilton.
This is Miriam Raftery with a public service announcement from the San Diego Humane Society. June is Adopt-a-Shelter Cat Month, and this year it's more important than ever for the San Diego Humane Society to find adoptive homes for cats. That's because the organization is at 175% capacity for cats. That includes 58 cats recently rescued from a home in City Heights, where the felines were found living in deplorable conditions after a neighbor called to seek help. San Diego Humane Society's humane officers and medical team transported the rescued cats to their campuses in El Cajon, Oceanside, and San Diego for vaccines, spaying and neutering, as well as medical treatment, including surgeries. Lieutenant Regina Price with Humane Society says this is the perfect example of see something, say something. The owner had been hospitalized for several weeks, and the assigned caretaker was not able to visit the property. She calls the situation a very sad result of miscommunication. Anybody who needs help caring for their pets can contact the Humane Society for assistance. For more information, visit sthumane.org. And if you suspect animal cruelty or neglect in your neighborhood, please report it to the San Diego Humane Society by calling 619-299-7012 and press 1 to report animal abuse. Staff have named the rescued cats after famous authors such as Dr. Seuss, Ernest Hemingway, and Jane Austen, as well as for hockey teams. At least 36 cats from the rescue are still available for adoption. Organization-wide, the San Diego Humane Society has over 1,300 cats in its care, with 149 of them currently ready to be adopted. You can view adoptable cats and other pets online at sdhumane.org. You can also visit animals in person during walk-in adoption hours each Tuesday through Sunday from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. at the San Diego Humane Society's locations in El Cajon, Escondido, and Oceanside.
A free press is the foundation of our democracy. KNSJ Radio is dedicated to providing nonprofit news in the public interest, not special interests. We rely on your support to continue bringing you important stories from San Diego and East County that you won't hear anywhere else. Please make a generous donation at knsj.org to sustain KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
Locally, nearly 1,000 workers in the past 6 years have suffered from unpaid wages or wage theft judgments that were not paid out. Lost wages amount to nearly $13 million. Soon, local victims of wage theft may be able to return to the County Workplace Justice Fund for help while trying to regain their lost wages. The San Diego Board of Supervisors approved the introduction of an ordinance on May 24th, which would put $100,000 into the new fund. Supervisors will meet on June 13th to consider and adopt the ordinance to formally establish the Workplace Justice Fund. Payments of $3,000 or $4,000 would help wage theft victims get by while waiting for their claims to make their way through the legal system or waiting for employers to pay the wage theft judgments against them. The county's Office of Labor Standards and Enforcement, or OLSE, will administer and accept applications for the fund, also giving wage theft victims information on how they may qualify for CalFresh, CalWORKS, the county library's GED and broadband program, and many more services. OLSE continually educates businesses on compliance with labor standards laws through Know Your Rights campaigns and seminars, so businesses are aware and can act in good faith. OLSE also acts as a regional resource for all San Diegans who have questions about workers' rights and labor law compliance. The office offers information about a wide range of topics, including sick leave, overtime, wages, and more. For more information, you can call the OLSE advice line at 619-985-1597 or email olse@sdcounty.ca.gov or visit the Office of Labor Standards and Employment website, which you can find by researching online for the San Diego County OLSE. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Daniela Torres.
It is getting increasingly expensive to have a home on the edge of the woods in California in terms of home value and insurance costs. A new study from the nonprofit think tank Resources for the Future finds that home values in a fire hazard severity zone drop 4.3%, an average of $21,500, when sellers make the required disclosure. Margaret Walsh is a co-author of the report.
We want to know that people understand the risk when they choose where to buy a house. And if they do know the risk, we would expect them to be reflected in the prices.
Walls says to mitigate the risk of a destructive wildfire, local governments can limit building in the urban wildland interface. The state and federal governments can reduce the fuel load on public lands. Homeowners can remove brush and other flammable materials, make sure building materials are fire resistant, and build in defensible space. Two large insurance companies, State Farm and Allstate, just announced they are no longer writing new homeowners policies in California, in large part due to the risk of wildfire. Walls says the effects of climate change are taking a financial toll.
If you're in a high fire risk area, it's already hard to get insurance. So now two more companies are unavailable to you. So you'll probably end up going to the FAIR plan, considered insurance of last resort.
The FAIR plan is a state-run risk pool that offers fire insurance in high-risk areas that are not served by traditional insurers. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
We're on the road in East County, visiting some amazing towns and meeting some incredible people across our region. Welcome to another adventure on East County Magazine's On the Road.
This is Hayden Parsley, on the road in Hucumba Hot Springs for East County Magazine. You can take a trip into California's past at the Desert View Tower, a quirky and whimsical relic of the past that is still open to the public here in San Diego's East County. Located just off Interstate 8 at the Incapa exit, the tower is poised on a rocky overlook surrounded by desert on all sides. Built in the 1920s by Bert Vaughn, a real estate tycoon who owned much of Hucumba, this 70-foot watchtower has become a tourist attraction and a local landmark on the outskirts of the small town known as Hucumba Hot Springs. Originally built to commemorate the area's rough pre-highway history, the tower houses a small museum filled with artifacts and oddities of California's history, including our region's Native American, Spanish, and pioneer past. The top floor of the tower is an observation deck, with a coin-fed telescope that provides a breathtaking view of Imperial Valley and the Anza-Borrego Desert, though now somewhat marred by a wind farm. In 1950, a gift shop was added around the base of the tower. The shop still operates today and is filled with an eclectic mix of items such as geodes, gems and minerals, vintage postcards, historic and travel books on our region, arts and crafts items such as handmade Tecate tiles, onyx bookends, musical instruments, carved animal sculptures, and more. Roaming this area of the tower are the owner's many friendly dogs that add to the rustic charm of the location. You can also get a workout pumping a player piano while listening to old-time tunes. While I was there, the wind was gusting. It was a bit chilly, and I wished I had a better coat when I reached the top. The owner says this is atypical, though, and that it is warm and sunny most days. The proprietor, Ben Schultz, has many colorful stories on East County's history, culture, and colorful characters, having operated the site for many years. Boulder Park at the Desert View Tower was created in 1933 by an unemployed engineer, Merle Ratcliffe, who was out of work during the Great Depression. He sculpted reptiles and fanciful animals out of the huge stone boulders. I didn't get a chance to tour these, which will be an adventure for another time.
Patrick Casey, a champion BMX rider, died June 6th while performing jumps at the Slayground Motocross Park in Ramona. Despite life-saving attempts by sheriff's deputies and paramedics, he was pronounced dead at the scene. Casey turned pro at age 16 and was a medalist in multiple X Game competitions. He leaves behind his wife, Chase, and two children, Reed and Tatum. News of Casey's death has made national news headlines, including Parade and People magazines. The freestyle motocross track is owned by Axel Hodges, known as Slay, three-time gold medalist in the X Games himself. The facility has hosted X Game competitions for the past 3 years. Casey's death is under investigation by the San Diego County Sheriff's Department. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
Meta, the parent company of Facebook and Instagram, is brushing off calls to investigate the effect its social media platforms have on children's mental health. Last week, shareholders rejected a proposal to hire an independent law firm to evaluate the effectiveness of Meta's Audit and Risk Oversight Committee. The resolution alleges the company regularly breaks pledges to remove content harmful to children. Randy Weingarten, president of the American Federation of Teachers, spoke out in favor of the resolution.
In classrooms and communities across the country, AFT members are witnessing firsthand the impact of students suffering from anxiety, bullying, trauma, body dysmorphia, and the eating disorders as a direct result of exposure to images on Instagram, as well as the violence glorified on Meta's platforms.
Meta's proxy statement advised a no vote, saying the company already prohibits harmful content and provides parents tools to monitor their children's activity online. Last week, the U.S. Surgeon General issued a 19-page advisory on adolescent social media use, saying it is predictive of a decrease in life satisfaction for girls 11 to 13 years old and boys 14 to 15. Weingarten said we need more clarity on what Meta is doing to protect children.
While Meta's Audit and Risk Oversight Committee is charged with evaluating risks, shareholders have no idea how the committee operates, what information it considers, or whether it just cedes its authority entirely to CEO Mark Zuckerberg.
The White House recently called for changes, alleging that Meta uses manipulative design techniques embedded in their products to promote addictive and compulsive use by young people to generate more revenue. In addition, the FTC is calling for a ban on collecting young children's data. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
This is Connie Beck with Ready, Set, Grow. I'm going to help you create healthy and beautiful gardens using less money, less hard work, and much more fun. I'd like to talk today about some trees that I absolutely love, and number one on that list is always and forever for me going to be the California live oaks. We're here in East County where the California live oaks are the most beautiful tree that we have. One live oak tree, mature, fully grown, can support up to 1,500 species of other life. They are so beautiful, so iconic, so much an important part of what we think we're seeing when we look at California. It's especially important to plant a live oak tree now because of the fact so many of the oldest of the trees out in the hills are being killed by the gold-spotted oak borer. That is a pest which is imported, and it is killing a lot of the old trees. But you can grow California live oaks on your property. What people don't understand is that's a fast-growing tree if you just hook it up to some irrigation while it's young. The first 10 years of life, you can water that tree year-round. You can put a dripper on it and walk away from it, let it get some water once a week, and it will grow to a 15 to 20-foot tree in just 10 years. And that's a good tree. That's a hardwood tree. That's not a junky tree like an ash. By the way, don't plant ash trees. There's a bad disease coming from back east, which is eventually going to kill all the ash trees in California, as it has all the ash trees from east of Ohio
coming west. So plant yourself a beautiful California live oak. That wouldn't be limited to just the live oaks. If you live out in the backcountry, consider an Engelmann oak too. That was Kara Knott's favorite tree, and that is a beautiful tree. It's also known as a Mesa oak. It will take less water than the California live oak and do beautifully. Some other good trees, not all of them natives, that you could put in your yard. There are two great trees from Australia that do so well here. They're quick growing and they are great shade trees. They don't have any obnoxious habits. They don't have terrible roots. They don't drop a big mess. They're good trees. My favorite of them is called the peppermint tree or the peppermint willow tree. It's Agonis flexuosa. A-G-O-N-I-S, Agonis flexuosa. It's a beautiful tree. It has a natural weeping form, gets about 25 feet tall, maybe 15 feet wide, and grows very quickly. After a few years, you can shut the water off to it, and it'll make it on its own. It smells lovely, and it has the cutest flowers when it blooms. It hangs down something that looks like a black ribbon with little white flowers on it. The ribbon is maybe half an inch wide. It's really a cute tree. And everybody I know who's ever used it as a yard tree or on the side of the house has been delighted with it. A very similar tree is called the Australian willow, Geigera parviflora. It's about the same size. It's very drought tolerant. It's similar to the Agonis and a very popular, small, non-messy tree. Now let's talk about a nice tree that's messy. What does that mean? Well, it means that it mulches itself. And since we want to mulch things here in East County, this is a great tree. It takes care of itself. It's an African sumac tree. You can see those in front of the El Cajon Library, all the way around the library. There's another one at the Rancho San Diego Library. That's the big tree that's kind of a dull green color out front, reddish bark. It's the first tree that I planted when I moved onto my property 13 years ago. It's very popular with birds. It grows with virtually no water once you get it established. After 2 years, shut the water off. It'll be fine on its own. That's a tree that if you prune it correctly while it's still a baby, it will grow the rest of its life for you, and you will never have to prune it again. Another small tree that's very pretty to put in your yard. Put in a bronze loquat. It's not a big tree. It'll never get over about 15 feet tall, maybe 12 feet wide, even if it's very successful. And the leaves are big and green and glossy, and it also bears fruit. Now, I personally don't care for the fruit. It has a big seed and kind of a weird orange fruit around it. It doesn't taste bad. It just doesn't seem to me worth the effort, but scrub jays adore it. I know that on my bronze loquat, I never get to eat the fruit because the birds find it before I do. So these are some ideas that you can try in your yard. And I think that all of these trees are basically pain-free. You won't be calling the pruning guy constantly to come and hack on it because these are good trees.
This concludes today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, AK Jewel, Brian Boyko, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road, Blues 3 Music, and Pond 5. If you would like to underwrite or sponsor the East County Magazine Radio Show or get involved as a volunteer on our public interest news show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We'll be back soon with another edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show.